All right, it's a few minutes before 8:30, but because there's so much to do, I'm going to jump the gun a little bit. If you read my course synopsis on the kiosk, it said one of the promises of geology is that beer would be consumed.
That's why I brought the popcorn. Is that okay?
There are other things that I will lie to you about. That is not one of them. There is beer here to be consumed if you are of legal age. There is Coca-Cola here if you are of legal age. And there is ginger beer here, which is very similar to ginger ale. Now, for a stinking minute, quit being Lutheran. Please come up here, get a beer, or a Coke, or a ginger beer. If you feel like beer is too much at this time of evening, you can have half and take one of the cups and share it with a friend, or make a new friend.
That's good for him. Alcohol is good for him. Absolutely.
One is like double strength.
But there's a limit, though. There's a limit, though, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. It's just like ginger ale. There's some good. All right. Good. I sure hope those are twist up. Yeah.
Here.
Thank you.
Anybody else want one of their very own? You're thinking you might get angry with your partner during the session, and you might.
Could I have my one just for me?
Yes.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, while we're waiting for Cliff, since he's already heard all of this before, a little bit of this. Everybody ready back there in the back corner?
Yep.
All right. My name is Donald M. Coverly. This is me right here. I am a hydrogeologist, which means I study groundwater. I've been doing it now for 21 years. Before that, I was a logging geologist offshore in the oil business. I got a bachelor's degree from Humboldt State University in Northern California and a master of engineering from the Colorado School of Mines in Golden, Colorado. I came here on May 17th, 1997 for the first time to study the groundwater on the other side of the creek. Knew nothing about Holden Village. I was on volunteer teaching staff in 1999, 2001, and 2002. The teaching coordinator in 2002 asked me what I was doing the second week of September. Since it was July, I said, I have no idea. He said, do you want to come back up and teach geology for Elder Hostel at the time? I said, no, I can't do that. And then I fell asleep that night and woke up the next day and came back and said, yes, I'd love to. So I've taught as part of the staff every year since 2002, with one exception of 2007, because there was no Elder Hostel. That was going to be the first Holden Elder Village. But there was a fire, so the village was closed. There was fire up the valley. My session tonight is essentially going to be an hour-long commercial for the study of geology. I think each of us on the teaching staff has some hopes for you. And so that Elizabeth, through Bible study, has some belief that as you go away, you will continue Bible study. Cliff, for the health and wellness session, hopes that you will incorporate some of that into your life and you will live longer and healthier. Jim, in his writing sessions, I think that you will write further away from here seems reasonable to me. Trish and Karen, with the art sessions, they have some that you may continue to do art. And this is the one way that I think my job is harder than theirs, which is if you want to study geology, you will have to make some effort. I think as I wrote in one of the session outlines, I can teach you geology for 5 hours, and you'll be a little bit smarter, better looking, fitter, better liked. But what I would rather do is, by any means possible, get you interested in geology, so that then you would go and pursue it some other place in more depth, because then you will get much smarter, much better looking, much fitter, and much better life. So tonight is essentially what I've thought about as I put the thing together, is an hour-long commercial for the study of geology. And so there's no heavy lifting tonight. I've practiced this as a soliloquy, so if you've got questions, I'll be glad to answer them tomorrow or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday. But I know you're all tired out from all the questions that you asked Cliff, so we won't have to do that now. And to get to the heart of the matter, I will show you a slide in a minute that will help to convince you that a reason that you should study geology is because it will be better for your health. That many of the things that Cliff will talk about tomorrow for successful aging can be accomplished through the study of geology. I will further try to entice you by falling back on a recognized authority. Here's the real thing. I've had the best professional career of anyone I've ever met, or of anyone I know, or of anyone I know who's ever met. I've had more fun days at work and had more good days at work than anybody I know. And that's because through predestination or good fortune or dumb luck, I tripped into a geology program at Humboldt State University. And one of the responses I can have to that is to sort of shake my head and laugh. And another response to that I can have is to try to, by any means possible, enticing you or yelling at you or pleading with you or whatever it happens to be, to get you a little bit interested in studying geology. So that's what I'm doing tonight. The promises of geology. And this is a little bit of a takeoff on the summer theme, and I hope it's okay that I've played off the promises of God and talked about the promises of geology. I hope that's okay with him. If it's not, I'm in trouble. Puzzles will be solved. Like I said, I've been doing this for a long time, and it was only 2 years ago that I had the epiphany that people might come to the sessions for reasons other than the one I thought they were coming to, which was solving puzzles, because that's what I do in my business world, and that's what I like to do. But I've got grad school, right? So learning simple things takes me a long time. So people could come, and they're here because someone that they're with is really interested in doing this. Or they want to go on a hike because they think they'll take a photograph. The light will be a way that they'll never see it again. And so I've tried to broaden out into the other ways that geology or this time together might be interesting to you. So puzzles will be solved, beauty will be seen, exercise will be had, community will be experienced, beer will be consumed. Does everyone now have an open beer? Excellent. Or ginger beer or Coca-Cola? Old stories will be told. Jim talked earlier at Vespers about us telling stories. New stories will be lived. Travel, variety, fame, and fortune may be part of the package, although they're not promised. Everything else on there is promised. Why should you study geology? Proof of the outcomes of studying geology comes from the highest secular authority. Gay, this is the thing, since some people can't read that since they're listening to it on DVD, could you just read that first little bit, because it sounds better in one of your voice.
Okay, sure. Dear Ann Landers, that's the part you want me to read?
All of that, up until the part that says absolutely.
Okay. This letter, my first ever to a columnist, was sparked by your column about the geologist's wife who asked, are all geologists the very embodiment of all the virtues and qualities that are universally admired in humankind? Have they alone of all the professions achieved a state of grace far beyond that ever speculated by history's most hopeful philosophers and theologians? The answer is absolutely.
Thank you. You can hold on to that. So, and then it goes on in great detail, and it's really boring to hear again about how great geologists are. But you can read that at your leisure. Now, not all opinions are of that high same order. This is another one, and you can read that, and then you can laugh, and people will know you've gotten it. But obviously, you see it's not in your packet of stuff. So yeah, a geologist, that's not really a job. Okay. Why should you study geology? If you don't believe Ann Landers, you can believe a doctor. Most positive things a doctor will tell you to do for a long, satisfying, and healthy life can be accomplished by studying geology. I say the positive things because one of the things Cliff will tell you tomorrow is not to smoke. I don't know quite how to fit that into the study of geology. Stay mentally challenged. Do aerobic exercise, participate in community, use alcohol in moderation, experience beauty, experience variety, and surround yourself with positive people.
Nobody has to come to tomorrow's talk. There it is.
Let's do a little comparison tomorrow and see. Puzzles will be solved. Again, this is the thing I focus on because it's the thing I get paid for most of the time. Some of the puzzles are theoretical in nature, some are practical, some solutions are complicated, and some are simple. Here's a theoretical puzzle. This has to do with pump test information when you have a confined aquifer that's overlain by a leaky water table aquifer. And of course, where J sub I is the Bessel function of the first kind in order L, and Km are chosen such that something equals zero. Now, you guys are probably all still good on Bessel functions, but I'm a little sketchy. Practical puzzles. Here's a puzzle. Where's the helipad that we're supposed to land on? That's the concrete that I'm standing on. This is in Indonesia. Having been there 1 year and being landed on that and then coming back the next year and not being able to land there because the growth was, that's me at 6'2", and so there's 8 feet of growth in a year. That's a practical puzzle that they never tell you about in graduate school. Generally, the puzzles we think about in geology are what kind of rock is it and how did it get that way? We see a series of rocks. What kind of rock are they? Why did they get tipped up? Did they get deposited that way? Did they get formed that way? Has something happened? Is there some way that we can connect the lines here and see if some of these beds are continuous over space? Here are two different, to my eye, there are two different kinds of rock here. Down in the bottom, there are some stuff that looks like it was a big mudslide to me. Rounded fragments in some fine matrix, and then above it looks to be what is a basalt flow to me. The specifics of that are irrelevant to us in the moment. It's, here's a puzzle, how do we solve it? Here's some material, it's got a certain shape to it, certain texture to it, how did it get deposited here? This is a picture of me somewhere earlier in my career wearing pink sunglasses, for one thing. Those were sporty back in the day. This is jet fuel that was found floating on top of the groundwater. The first big job I did was at the Texaco refinery in Casper, Wyoming. And hydrocarbon floats. It floats on top of water. And so on the groundwater table, the groundwater surface below the refinery was floating hydrocarbon product of places up to 4 or 5 feet thick. This is one of the puzzles that we try to solve is where are things in space? This table is my schematic for the refinery itself, and these jars were sort of set out where on the map we found each of these different kinds of hydrocarbon product. And again, we see at least down in this one corner where the stuff is fairly different than it is other places. There's a huge duck that we found in the middle of that was a rubber duck that we found on the North Platte River because it runs through the refinery. What do you do here? This is a huge sinkhole in Mexico that after a bunch of rain earlier this year opened up, and I have no idea how deep that is, but there's a building here that's just about to fall in, that we could probably make an estimate of how wide that is and then double or triple it to find out how deep and big this bloody hole is.
Don, was that hole as round as it looked? It looked like a man-made hole.
Yes. Yes.
How come it was so round?
I don't know that. I assume that's limestone and it just sank in, and I suppose that at a certain size, the mass sort of takes over, and it just sort of shears out everything.
That's impressive.
Some of the puzzles are fairly complicated, like what on earth is going on here? We'll talk about that more tomorrow. Again, here's a series of geologic beds that have been, that my interpretation is, they've been laid down flat, they got tipped up on the end, they got raised up in the air, they got eroded off, and then some more stuff came down on top of them. That's the kind of puzzles we get faced with. Technical and complicated solutions. Here is a piece of equipment called an ADCP, an acoustic Doppler current profiler. $30,000 worth of gear in that little tub right there. It uses the Doppler effect to measure currents. This is in a bay in Indonesia. Can measure it at 1 foot thicknesses. This is a radio controlled latch. You put a bunch of dead weight on the bottom of it, you dump the whole thing overboard with a buoy on top, it sits down off the bottom of the bay, records data, you come back 3 months later, you press the radio control button and hope the latch goes. floats back up to the surface and you recover. This is another piece of equipment that we use for offshore monitoring work that takes a number of various readings, puts them on a computer. We read the computer printout and we make some evaluations of things. Other problems have simple solutions. We're trying to figure out how much water this is in right down the road here, trying to figure out how much water is coming out of a seep. You put a flume in the way, which is just a thing with an opening that you know how wide it is. The water piles up behind it. You do a formula and you're done. Geologists use a certain kind of compass. They're measuring the orientation of a rock with that compass. Very simple. This is a highly trained senior hydrogeologist doing incredibly complicated technical work. Pouring water in a hole. Yeah. That part's easy. The idea behind that is at the bottom of this casing, that casing is drilled down 50 feet. This is right up past the bridge here. And the material in the bottom of the hole, if that material is very permeable, you have to use a fire hose to keep this tubing full of water because it's being flushed out into the geologic world. In this case, the fact that I'm using a 1 or 5 gallon bucket with a little hose on it means that this thing is sunk in something that's relatively impermeable. We'll talk about this on Thursday as part of the mine remediation. This is me doing highly technical work in an old hollowed out canoe in Ghana. So this is sort of the meeting of the new technology and the old technology.
That is cool.
When you solve puzzles, sometimes you're wrong, right? At least that happens to me. My record isn't perfect anymore. I'm not very good about that. My godson just gets sad. Here's an example where I was wrong. This is in Indonesia. I was looking for water seeping into streams. And here I'm working with two of my guides and we're going to sample the water so that when I went to Ghana many years later and I saw something very much like that, this was in the dry season, so everything was dry. I'm the senior hydrogeologist, you guys. Yeah, it's dry season now. When it gets to be wet season, there's going to be seeps here. This is in the wet season. And then this is later in the wet season, 3 months later. And then this is the next year in the first part of the wet season. And then this is the next year later in the wet season. And never were there any seeps there. So that's one of the times I've been wrong. I tell you another time I've been wrong, but that's the only time. Sometimes you brainstorm about stuff and you come up with a harebrained scheme and it works out really well. In this case, this plastic piece here had fallen down a well because it had separated from the top part, a manufacturer's defect. It was going to cost $5,000 to redrill the well, and through a little brainstorming and some work at Home Depot, I was able to put together what I call a fishing tool. And what I thought was going to be a really long, painful experience of either trying to fish this thing out or having to spend $5,000, it took me about 45 seconds to do. So when I came back, I'm rarely that full of myself, but I was that. Beauty will be experienced. Now we've gotten past the puzzle-solving part, and now we're into the good stuff. Beauty may come from simply a rock or a rock outcrop, may come in the form of the landscape, or may come from the fringes of your geologic study. I happen to think this is a really pretty rock. This is in Copenhagen. I happen to think this is a really pretty rock too, and this is right up the trail here, I can show you. This is looking on the end of the rock, and if you look at it from another view, now there's a completely different thing going on here, which to my way of looking means that this rock has been stretched out. If we're gonna study geology, we should come up with a reason why that is. This is a piece of core sample drilled from just down the valley, and this is the bottom of that core in the bedrock, and here is a piece of rock that, again, I happen to think is just pretty. There are some geologic context that we can put to that and help make sense of the geologic picture. These are the mountains in near Banff, Canada.
here is something. I'm not sure why a little bit of this cut out, but I will read this to you. When analytic thought is applied to experience, something is always killed in the process. That is fairly well understood, at least in the arts. Mark Twain's experience comes to mind in which, after he had mastered the analytical knowledge needed to pilot the Mississippi River, he discovered the river had lost its beauty. That's from the book Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, a book I enjoyed very much, on page 70. My response to that from Don C's Big Book of Thoughts on page 1 is, are you joking? Because the fact that I know that this is limestone, even though I've never been up there and hiked it, but just because the fact it forms the cliffs, and this is sandstone and shale because it erodes differently and more easily and therefore causes the slopes. The fact that I know that, I can't see how I can think this is any more beautiful. I can't see how my knowing some things, to put it in a framework for myself, changes what I think is one of the prettiest places I've ever been. So me and Robert Piersig, the author of Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, have one difference of opinion. The only way you can make that better is to put a golf course there. This is the fourth hole at Banff Springs, generally ranked as one of the 18 prettiest holes in the world. And it's prettier in person than it is in the picture. And for you golfers, the first time I hit it over and made it, and the second day I played, I put it in the water. So this is at the Eagle Mine site between Vail and Beaver Creek. This is in the fall when the aspens are turning. This is from one of the tailings pot or one of the waste rock piles looking up the Railroad Creek Valley. That's not bad. Back in the mountains in Canada, Railroad Creek at Thanksgiving of 1998. The view from Lodge 1 one morning in November of 2000. I was up here working and getting paid. Not all of it is mountain views. This is the beach in Indonesia. This is a sunset, also in Indonesia, looking back towards the island of Bali. Now, you could say, yeah, Don, you show all of the, you know, there are other forms of beauty, right? This is Lindsay, Nebraska. It has a certain bucolic charm to it. This is John Preister's farm field. That's Gary Preister drilling. Gary's from over in Cornley. We're at Lindsay, but Gary's from two communities over. And here I am, this is Rock Springs, Wyoming. Again, another more subtle beauty there. I said that sometimes beauty is found at the fringes of the geologic world. In this case, while I was sampling village wells in Ghana, one of the projects that I've completed, I was there six different times, and we would go back to the same locations. On about four different occasions, I ran across these four characters, and we would play together. What a good senior professional does is train others and teach them how to do things, and you can see the rest of my team working in the background while I'm doing public relations work. In the stuff that I sent back to Newmont Mining, who's who I was working with, this one didn't make it in. Here's another. This is the best picture I'm ever going to take, and so I'm going to show it to you. Again, this was in a small neighborhood, and when I've been to Ghana, the first time I went, I was ready to be a minority. I wasn't ready to be an utter oddity. I thought I would be in the community, and every now and again I would see another Caucasian. They call them Obrunis. I would be there for 2 weeks at a time, and if I would see one other Caucasian while I was out in the public, that would be remarkable. So every time I would show up, the only time me and Brad Pitt are going to have anything in common is I would jump out of the truck and people would flock. Part of the problem is Obruni, the word for Caucasian, is also the word for ghost in the local dialect of Shwe, so that any small children would see me and run away screaming. So I'm taking it that she's the youngest one of the group, and there was no way in the world she was going to not have that wall between her and me. Everybody else in the group was pretty cool, and I think this is just, again,
that is a great picture.
I'm never going to take a better one. Here's a kid on the fringes of the group looking to the middle to see what are the cool kids doing. They're enjoying, right? I mean, there's a head right there. That head the guy dove in. If you count up heads and feet, it doesn't all match up. All right, enough beauty. Exercise will be had. If you study geology anywhere except for a classroom or a lab, you will have to walk or hike to go see it. This is me just down the road here a little bit, not only hiking but bushwhacking, and then up on one of the waste rock piles. This is a very common view that I had in both Ghana and Indonesia in my time there, which is hiking behind, far behind everybody else in my team. This is hiking, they call this the forest. And that's still called the forest. And when guides hike and then hike so far away from them that you can no longer find them, that sort of is that doesn't sound like guiding very much to me. And so we, every now and again, would have to have a talk about that. This is me after a part of a day of walking through the forest in Ghana. This is time in Indonesia. The geology of Indonesia is very interesting. It's a very young geologic. It's very steep. The place that I was living was on the backside of this hill, so half the days I was there, I would have to hike up to this top of this hill and then come down here and do my work down here. And then at the end of the day, when we were tired and beat up, hike back up to the top of this dang thing. And at the top, the steps that they had made were so steep that they had cut fire hoses so that we could use them to hand over hand to get to the top. My job there was, again, to evaluate springs and seeps along the streams, and at the bottom, at the very end of these tributaries, they were relatively flat. And then as you would start to work your way back up, one of the rules of hydrogeology or of surface water geology that we would learn is that in time, streams continue to get steeper as you go closer to the head, right? They're flat at the mouth and steep at the head. And you go up a little further and it gets steeper, and then you go up a little higher and it gets even steeper, and then you go a little higher, and now you're not hiking anymore so much as scrambling. And again, here's my guides way the heck and gone, because they can climb faster than I can, and this is me partway through a day of hiking in Indonesia. This was really bad. This is one of those times when the way I got to go to Indonesia the first time was the boss that I worked for, I badgered him mercilessly for 18 months. Every time he would go to Indonesia, I was living in Denver at the time and working there, and he would go to Indonesia because he worked with the client there, and he would come back 3 weeks later, and I would say, I would have three questions. John, how are you? I didn't really care. Two, how did it go? I didn't really care. And three, do you need any help? Right? Al McGuire, the old basketball coach at Marquette, said, when somebody calls you on the phone, it's the third thing they ask you about that they really called about. Hi, Don, how are you? Don't care. How's it going? Don't care. And then number three, next time you're on the phone with somebody. Anyway, after a year and a half of badgering John, he finally said, yeah, I've got this job I want you to do. And while I was bushwhacking through stuff like this, everything in Indonesia has thorns on it. The second word I learned in Bahasa Indonesian was duri, which is thorn, because everything has thorns on it. And so here I am trying to climb through this thicket of thorns. It was at one of those points that I thought, be careful what you ask for, because you just might get it. Now, it's not all aerobic exercise. This is some demolition work. This is in Copper Basin. This is my colleagues from the mine, the consulting company I work for. The mining company paid us to come up for 2 days. And back in 2000, they moved to a new water diversion and collection box up in Copper Basin. They needed to get the old one torn out, so a group of us came up and did some work for the village to bust out. Finally, we get to break something rather than having to build something, so that was fun. There's weightlifting that's involved too. This is a 75-pound weight that has an anemometer kind of thing on top of it that we use to measure the stream flow. We want to know how much water is coming down Railroad Creek. The way that we do that, this is the footbridge just up here, is we use that anemometer, we figure out how deep it is, we can figure it out off the, there's a wheel there that has a handle on it. The anemometer spins, and the faster it spins, the more water is going by. We do a bunch of math, and we figure out how much water is flowing down the creek. Every other time, my partner Pete there would pull that 75-pound bomb up, and we'd have to yard it out on the one side and move it around one of those stupid posts and then put it back in. So there's some weightlifting you'll have to do, too, if you're going to study geology, sooner or later. This is Pete doing some more work. This is in the springtime when the stream flows very fast, and so we have to have that huge weight on the bottom to keep everything stable. So this is down at Spence Bridge, or down at the Goat Bridge, down there. Community will be experienced. Even if you study geology on your own, sooner or later you will have to share it with others, either to have them check your work or to fight with someone who has a different opinion to you. I've been doing consulting work for 21 years. The only thing I can send out on my own without having it be reviewed by somebody else is a cover letter for an invoice. Anything that I do of a technical nature, even if I come up with the harebrained scheme myself, has to be consulted with someone else who says, no, Don, that's really crazy, you can't say that. Or, yeah, that sounds good to me. And of the joys of my work, that I enjoy solving puzzles. I enjoy coming up with solutions. But what I truly enjoy the most is being involved in that community. And I have been able to do it for 20 years now. Geology school, you usually go and have a six-week field camp where you go and map geology, do real geology. This would have been in the spring of 1981. This is Mark Kemphill Haley. He's now a professor at Humboldt State University. That's a senior hydrogeologist of marginal repute. This is Bill Lostikoff. He is a geologist. It works for the same company that I do. He works in the Anchorage office. And this is Dave Lindbergh, who works as a consultant in the Humboldt area. This is in the Inyo Mountains. That's a little community called Swansea, California, population 3. What you can't read here because it's too faint is the population of 3 is one guy and 2 45s. So where we entered our field camp area was near his property. We made sure to give him a wide berth. This is a team of professionals here at Holden in the fall of 1997. We came up here, and one of the things we did was both in Railroad Creek and then up out of Stehekin, sampled the fish populations. So this is a group of about 6 of us who were part of a larger group. This is our team, probably in the fall of 97. And again, we came up here together for the first time, didn't know anyone in the village. It's still one of the best times of my life. A number of these people are still good friends of mine. And if there is something better than spending days with people you like and doing fun work, I don't know what it is. And one of the ways that geology is different, let's think about this for a second. You know, if you got really excited, you could try to become a doctor, right? Think about that for a second. If you're a doctor, who do you spend time with? Other doctors, sick people, and nurses. Now, nurses I'm okay with. But can you imagine spending all the rest of your days with doctors and sick people? That doesn't... That's just my take on that. I'd rather spend it with folks like this. This is us again, and this is another subset of that, all same people, back in the spring of 1998. And of course, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You know, there's probably either 10 or 11 college degrees in that group. Just think of that while we're acting like that. I skipped a slide here. No, maybe not. Here's a group of guys I work with in Ghana. We're out again hiking through the forest. Every now and again, our small community would include the larger community. This is at a church school in one of the local areas. And we can't show up, particularly having an Obruni show up. Just can't not draw a crowd. And the only thing that draws a crowd more than an Obruni is an Obruni with a camera. This, in fact, is one of two photos. There were enough kids that I had to sort of do a panorama to get the rest of them. This is us working at another location. Some of the field team, again, intermixed with the community. I never knew that the grumpy old man, I always thought grumpy old man was just an American thing, but this is the Ghanaian grumpy old man. He would shoo the little kids away, and he would try to tell us what we were doing, even though I'm a senior hydrogeologist. Sometimes when you're, again, I'm trying to draw you in to a potential study of geology somewhere in the future. Sometimes you're in charge of the team and sometimes you have to explain things. Sometimes you're explaining things and someone says, let's stage a photo like we're actually paying attention and having fun. This is us actually doing the fish sampling work. The way that we did that was by you putting electrical current into the water. And it would electrify the water and it would shock the fish. And so Pete here in the front has one of the shocker coils. It looks like an old World War II mine detector. The fish would flip over and you would see a silver flash, and then all of us would have a dip net and we would dip up the fish. We'd put them in a bucket, we'd find out how many there were in a certain region. We'd weigh them, we'd measure them. A few of them would get harvested, which means that they would be killed, and then we would check the cadmium and zinc levels in their internal orbits. That's why everyone here is focused. That's me in the background. That's me as just another guy on the team. Sometimes you're part of a team, and sometimes you think you're the only one working. And in this case, I was the only one working. So, I suppose looking on your cell phone, I could be considered work as well. But here I am with my group of five guys, and at least four of them are checking their cell phones. So after we got done with that location, we had a little team meeting. Sometimes through the study of geology, you get to broaden out into wider communities, and that's another one of the absolute ways that I'm incredibly fortunate. This is Jim and Karen and Nancy Copeland Payton, who did Bible study for a couple of years. So you know, those of you who are here, if I had a picture of Cliff and Gay, I would have put it in there. Jim was saying at Vespers tonight, what a privilege it is to be here at Holden. I don't know about that. What I do know is it's a privilege to come and be with people that I've been with. Cliff and I have been doing this since 2005. That was the first time we worked together. We skipped a couple of years because of the fire year, and there was a year that they were gone and couldn't make it. Don't for a second mistake the clowning and the banter that we do in session for anything other than what it is. Cliff is one of the most honorable and best people I know. And the fact that I get to come here a week a year and see them and see Jim and Karen and do this stupid fool thing that I do with you guys is I don't know how to repay that feeling of good fortune.
Now, sometimes you do stuff in community and you think it's going to be a good idea, and then somebody takes a photo of it, and for the rest of your life you're going, what was I thinking?
That's me. This is volunteer teaching staff in the 2000 or 2002 season. I forget what the summer theme that was, but this was the July 4th parade, and somehow the Seven Seals had something to do with the summer theme, so somebody, some smart guy on the group thought, let's be the Seven Seals. So we marched in the parade with these stupid face paint whiskers on, and had a great time. And, you know, that last photo of the people clowning by the sign, I said there was like 11 college degrees. There's like 15 college degrees in this picture. This is Stacy Judula. Anybody know her? She's on the Holden Village board. Okay? So, anybody wants a little bit of blackmail stuff, let me know, because that was us. Beer will be consumed. You already know about that. This is the one picture I have of me drinking beer.
That's you.
That was on my 16th birthday, August 21st, 1973. That was in the state of Minnesota.
Now, tomorrow we're going to talk about aging, so we can see it, a prime example right here. Boy, Mother Nature is not very kind, is she?
I was trying to put it, I knew that I had this photo in my stash of old photos and wanted to, I think back in 1973, the drinking age in Minnesota was still 16. And so as an Illinois kid, me and some buddies drove up for my 16th birthday so that I could enjoy a legal beer. Now, why did geologists drink beer? Geologists carry heavy packs with rocks in them and hence get great. This is from an article that you can get on the internet, so of course it's true. We carry heavy packs and sometimes we get thirsty. Now that is lame. Some places geologists work, the water's not very good. That's true, but you can get bottled water anymore. Geologists need a good imagination because often they don't have a lot of data to work with. One of the things that we do in geology is we try to visualize things in three dimensions. You have rocks that have been eroded away, and you can see them in certain places, and you can't see them in other places, and you got to have a little creativity, and that's one of the things that helps. Put another way, Harry Hess, who was one of the early pioneers of plate tectonics theory, and he was also a Naval Reserve Rear Admiral, said, "Geologists make better intelligence officers than physicists or chemists, because they are used to making decisions based on data." When we have more time, I'll tell you about a lot of decisions I've made based on faulty data. The only other thing I have in all of my files that has anything to do with beer is I was in Copenhagen a couple of years ago and was walking around and I saw this on a building and I was thinking, you know, if I was Carlsberg and I'd hired an advertising firm and that was the best they could come up with, I'd think about maybe changing advertising firms because... But as I've made that joke with some other people, they say, well, no, that's very much more in the Danish character, right? That you have to know where you're at. And to say, absolutely the best beer in town, people would think that was boasting. So, old stories will be told and new stories will be lived. Again, solving puzzles in community and being able to tell stories, geology is a round hole that I'm around paying for. Here's a group of kids in the little community of Yau Tano, Ghana. This was in November of 2008.
I took this picture in November of 2008 because of the time before I had been there, which was in September of 2008. Rather than there being a group of little kids at the door to greet me, there was the village chief and about 10 really big, ominous-looking guys. So maybe everybody here has been accosted by a drunken Ghanaian village chief, and if that's the case, then there's nothing special to it. But I'm fairly confident that I'm the only. The communities that I worked in Ghana ranged anywhere from 5,000 people to this village, which was 150 people, and in a larger picture, the community building there would look very much like an old Wild West fort from the 1870s or 1880s. So that was built solid on the outside, and then all of the domiciles were inside, and there were a couple of doors. And there is a well at the village that serves these people, and we went to sample the well, and I have a guide with me, a guy who's on the community relations team, who goes and visits ahead of time and says, we'll be there on Tuesday. We go do the sampling. We drive out. He jumps out on the way, says, we're done. We go down the road. Everything's fine. We go to the community. We drive in. We collect our sample. We pull up to the side. My coworker, Steven, jumps out and goes in kind of the side door of this little enclosure. We drive to the front door here to pick him up, pull to a stop, and the next thing you know, here's this mass of people coming out to see us. My driver rolls down the window, he's Ghanaian, starts to engage the person, who I don't know who this is yet, and this person says in a very loud voice, I don't want to talk to you, I want to talk to the Englishman. I went, thank goodness, I'm American. We had a conversation. He said, I'm the owner of this village. When you come to my village, you come and you talk to me. Okay. I said, you know, the way we've always, you know, this is my fifth time here, the way we've always, no, you come and talk to me. By this time, Stephen, my CR, community relations guy, has come through the village and not seen anybody and come out the front door, and he's come out the back, and now he's going to try to come and intercede. And the chief brushes him off and says, no, I'm talking to the Englishman. When you come here, you come and you talk to me before you sample the well. Okay, I'll be glad to do that. And then about 2 beats, and he says, do you smoke? And I'm thinking, is this a trick question? I said, well, no, I don't smoke. He said, in my village, we have very many good things to smoke. Okay. I don't know what to do. His tone changes, and then he says, the next time you come to my village, you come and talk to me. Steven gets in the car. We drive away. Things are quiet for quite a while. Later on that afternoon, back in the lab, we're working together, and I said, can someone fill me in here? And one of the guys said, well, you know he was drunk, right? And I'm like, no, I didn't know that. So that in my time in Ghana, I had thousands of interpersonal connections, and only two of them were a little bit sketchy, and that was one of them. This is in November. Between September and November, the village chief, the village owner, the chief, they said, he's gone back to his home village to be with his family. Which only about 2 weeks later did they tell me that he had passed away. They don't talk about people dying in Ghana. They talk about them going back to their home village to be with their family. Here's some kids behind a school where we were doing some work. I saw this picture as we were leaving and said I should have a picture of myself sitting there. And then the biggest of these three kids came up to me and said, make us a picture too. So I said, well, I'd love to. That's a black cobra, somewhere between 6 and 9 feet long. I'll save that story for some other time. Travel, variety, fame, and fortune may be part of the package, although these are not promised. I've been from Bali to Barcelona, and from Afosu, Ghana, to Arnhem, Holland. I've flown in little planes. I've taken boats. I've taken other boats. I've been on helicopters. I've traveled on a crew basket. This was during my days working offshore in the oil business, working on a drill rig. Every day, the samples that we collected would have to be put on a small boat, then to be boated? What's the right word?
Shipped.
Shipped on a boat back to shore. And so a big crane would pick up this basket, and I would go on it with my life preserver and a bunch of samples. This is a picture that you have to imagine of me taking a horse packing trip, because I've done that too, and I don't have any pictures of horses. I've seen the first Walmart in Ghana. I've seen King Jesus Auto Parts. I've eaten yellowfin tuna in Indonesia that is about 15 minutes old. These guys are eating sashimi, and I'm eating two big tuna steaks cooked with ginger and garlic and getting paid. That's me eating raw cocoa in Ghana. This is me eating cod or sole and broccoli and potatoes right down the road here. The one evening, we were out working late, and someone from the dining, well, I guess I came back up and fetched out dinner, and we ate it down there. This is me getting paid. I've stayed in pondoks in Indonesia, which are fairly low-tech. This is the first place I stayed. Woven bamboo sides and corrugated tin. That's the back door. Over time, they moved up a little bit, and I got better accommodations. This is in Ghana. This is in the hotel at Holden Village. I've been in dining halls that were open and other ones that were closed, and this is Holden Village. I said something about fame, perhaps being on, this may be touting myself too much, but I'm actually famous at one place in the whole world. This is Pete's Bar in central Ghana. If I were to go through the door right now to Pete's Bar and Benjamin the bartender would be there, I would walk through the door and he would say, two Cokes, you're back. Because I've been in that bar 85 times, and 84 of those times I've ordered two Cokes. The last two photos I have of me at work, this is me working. And that's me on the front of the boat too. That's me in bare feet, shorts, a t-shirt, sunglasses, and a ball cap, getting paid, with my feet feeling the old wood of a deck. And these two photos are simply, I don't know how to say how lucky I feel to be able to have done those things. That's the end part of the commercial. There is a very brief exegesis, if that's the right word. What skills do you need to study geology? There are three of them. There's not a lot of them, there's three of them. And in fact, you don't even have to be all that curious. If you're with somebody who's curious, that's enough. Little curiosity, the power of observation, and common sense. That's all you need. We'll start talking about that tomorrow, that all of geology is common sense. Here's our mantra. You can observe a lot just by watching. Yogi Berra was a catcher and not a geologist, but it still kind of fits. If you're the guy who designed this, then you can't study geology.
No.
And if you're the one who built this, you can't study geology. And if you're the guy who engineered this, you can't study geology. If you're anybody else but those three, and again, all three of these were done by guys, there's no way. Anybody else, you have what it takes to do geology, and that's all I have for this evening.